Okay, so I would take up today the just going over a question. I think Madeline and she wrote me about a week ago regarding Noahide's taking on new laws. So there's a lot of research to do, which I've been doing over the past week. So I'm going to share with you what I found. Just give me 1 second. And the question was taking on new laws. So Maimonides talks about this in his Mishneh Torah, also referred to as the Yad HaChazaka, which means the strong hand. Basically, it's his codification of the laws as he saw them based on the Talmud, of course.
Which volume, Rabbi?
Excuse me?
Which volume does he talk about that in?
That's in Kings. Chapters 9 and 10, he talks about the laws for Noahide. Definitely important reading. Specifically in chapter 10, he's talking about what can or what can't be observed. And again, it's based on the Talmud, too. The Talmud talks about it in, I think it's about page 59A in Sanhedrin. And, you know, Maimonides brings down from there. I'm sure he's culling from other areas, too. So there's a number of statements that the Talmud talks about. Like, for example, the Talmud says in one spot that, I believe it's right there in 59A, it says that a Noahide that studies the Torah is punishable with death. Another place it says Noahide that studies the Torah is equivalent to a high priest. And the resolve that the Gemara, the Talmud gives, is that it's when he's considered like a high priest, that is when he's studying his seven laws. But it refers to him as Akum, which is the acronym. The Hebrew, audible corollaries in English would be A, K, U, M. So that each letter stands for, A would be for Avodah, which means worship, and Kum, K-U-M, is an acronym for Kochavim, the first two and the last letter. That's usually how they do an abbreviation. They give you the first two and the last letter. So Kochavim, which would be in English, you know, K-O-C-H, A-V-I-M, so they took the K-O and the M, that means stars. So Avodah means worship, stars means, of course, stars. So star worship was a reference to those idolaters that worship the stars. That's how it started. But the Talmud says unconditionally, it seems to be using the term Akum for all Gentiles, because it doesn't come along and say that a Noahide has different rules. So from there you can make a very safe assessment that the Torah study is only to be limited to those seven laws. That's why it says Torah study is punishable with death. That's if it exceeds the area that's allowed for a Gentile. And when it says that a Gentile who studies the Torah is equivalent to a high priest, that means when he's just studying his seven. And of course we know that if the Gentile wants to take on more and keep the entire system, so then he's equal to a Jew. And the Torah says it everywhere. We've done that, we've discussed that a number of times. And again, there's no issue about equality either. I think we've addressed that in numerous cases. We've seen that clearly. The question is about taking on new laws. What can... Torah study is one thing. Keeping the Sabbath also is punishable with death. And Maimonides brings this down clearly. The thing that's very interesting is that if you look at least in the edition that I have, if you look at Maimonides' terms, so in the beginning of that chapter of 10 in the Laws of Kings, chapter 10, he refers to Noahide. He keeps on saying the word, a Noahide who does this, and the next law, a Noahide does this. And he keeps on saying it about 10 times. Then he switches off and he uses the term Akum, meaning the idolater. So he says an idolater that takes on more, he's not allowed to keep the Sabbath and not allowed to study Torah. He says either you have him taking on all, you become a proselyte, and you take on all, or you remain in your seven mitzvahs, right? Let me just read this verse. That is, this is Law 9, so it's 10:9 in the Laws of Kings. He says that an Akum, the idolater that involves himself in Torah, is punishable with death. He should not be involved in anything but his seven mitzvos alone, exclusively. And also a idolater that rests even on any other day of the week. So it doesn't have to be Saturday. It could be he rests an entire day on Tuesday. If he makes it for himself, like the Sabbath, he's worthy of death. And certainly it's not necessary to say if he makes a new holiday for himself. If he makes a holiday for himself. What is the rule of the matter? We do not allow him to create a new religion and to do any mitzvah for himself from his own knowledge. Either he becomes a complete convert and accepts all the mitzvahs, and then, of course, he's equal to a Jew. Or he remains in his Torah, and he doesn't add, and he does not detract. And if he learns Torah, or he keeps Shabbos, or he creates anything new, he gets the punishment of lashes, and we also inform him that he's worthy of death for this. But the Jewish court does not administer it, meaning it's a death punishment that's something which God administers, not man. Okay. So, of course, this is all to preserve the system. That's why there's such a severe penalty. That's why the Jew also is killed for his infringements. Then he goes back and he uses the word Noachai. So, up to this point, he just used the term idolater. And as I mentioned to you in the beginning of this chapter, he keeps on using Noachai, Noachai, Noachai throughout. Then all of a sudden he switches off. So it seems to be, the question is, why is he switching off the term? Yes, go ahead.
He switched back to using Noahide at the beginning of verse 10?
Yes, in Law 10, you mean.
Law 10.
Yes.
So when it says we should not prevent a Gentile who desires to perform, that word is actually Noahide.
Yes.
Interesting. English translation translates both of these in 9 and 10 as Gentile.
Okay. Well, here he switches off.
We're losing something in our translation.
Yeah. And again, we know Maimonides is the most meticulous writer. And he wrote everything with such care. I mean, it's just amazing because the volumes that he wrote, but despite the quantity, the vast sea of knowledge that he put into print, he was so meticulous as to each word that he used. That's why there's so much to be derived just from a simple change like that. And we'll try to get to that in a moment. And yes, he goes on to Law 10, and he says the Noahide that wants to do a mitzvah from all the other mitzvahs of the Torah in order to receive reward, and then he says we do not prevent him from doing it exactly like the law prescribes. Now, how does he say that when he just said in Law 9 that we do not allow him to create a new religion? Either he keeps all the commands or he just keeps his seven. Right? He just said that. Almost in the same breath, he then says, if he wants to take on the law to receive reward, then we do not prevent him from doing so. If he brings the sacrifice, we receive it. If he gives charity, we receive it. And it appears to me we even give that charity to the Jews, meaning it's equivalent to like a Jew giving charity. You give it to the same group, the same individuals. Since he is fed by the Jews, I mean, it happens to be, he brings down, and I'm not sure where the other case was, it's brought down that the law of the Torah that says that you have to sustain a non-Jew who lives amongst you, just like the Jews. So since we sustain a Noahite, so then when they give us and they sustain us, it's a two-way street. But then he says this, and this is the monkey wrench. And we went over this for a few hours yesterday, but during the week I've been going through this. And he says at the end of Law 10, but an Akum, now he goes back to idolater. An idolater that gives charity, we receive it, and we give it to the poor people of the idolaters. I mean, we accept it, we don't want to make them feel bad, but we don't give it to the Jew. Because that's coming from an idolatrous source. So here it seems he's talking about two different people. Whether the Noahide gives it tzedakah, you know, charity, then we give it to the Jew. But if the idolater gives it, then we don't. So there it's clear that it's two discrete people. But what I want to say is that earlier when he talks about that he switches off between Gentile and between idolater, I mean Noahide, idolater, there he's not doing it to identify two different people. Because the problem is like this. The Talmud doesn't do it. The Talmud just says that if you a Gentile that is involved in Torah, so he's like a high priest. And it means why? Because he's studying those seven laws, his own seven laws. His own seven laws means that Gentile that the Talmud is referring to is a Noahide, right? It has to be. Meaning when it says that he's equivalent, Gentile, the Akum. So the term that the Talmud uses is loose, meaning it encompasses all non-Jews. So, and Maimonides also says that you cannot allow him to take on more. Either he becomes a full observer of the 613, or he just keeps the seven. So then, of course, the question, I just want to reiterate, is that how can Maimonides then say in Law 10 that if he wants to take on another mitzvah to receive reward, we allow him, and we don't even refrain him from doing it exactly as it's supposed to be done. So which way is it? Is it that there's only the 613 or the 7? That's what he said in Law 9. Or, no, he can have 7, and if he wants to take on another one, he can do an 8th. So you see the contradiction, right?
Yep.
Okay. So I looked up, there's a long response by Rav Moshe Feinstein, as it's all. So, he wants to say over here that when it talks about, you see, the Maimonides says that you're not allowed to allow anybody to create a new religion. We're very careful that the system that God gave is preserved. So we don't allow him to add on those. So you cannot, if a person is a Noahide, he cannot take on more than the laws that go along with all. I know you said there's something like 60 that come that you arrive at based on the seven and all the related laws, right?
Okay.
That's what, I think you mentioned that to me, right? There was some rabbi who put that together or mentioned that to you?
I'm sorry, that they mapped the laws under the seven onto the 613?
I'm not, why don't you tell me?
Well, let's see, it's Aaron Lichtenstein in his book The Seven Laws of Noah who took the seven categories and then went through, and for example in the prohibition against theft, then he went through the 613 and said, okay, based on primarily Maimonides, which ones of these specific 613 fall under that one Noahide law category? And by the time he got done, he was into about 67, somewhere in that range of laws. And there's some, you know, I think, dispute about which ones fall and which ones don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Talmud, too, has additional things. It says even witchcraft, you can't, you know, a Noahide can't do, crossing species, you know, mixed breeding.
Right.
So,
is that what you were referring to?
Yeah, this is a friend, right, thank you.
Yeah, okay.
So again, the concept is that we preserve God's system exactly. So that's why there can't be any additions. So I guess according to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, he's saying it's not literally seven, but it's anything which goes along with those seven.
Yeah, more or less.
Okay. Right, so the problem we have then is when Maimonides is, if you're telling me that you can't keep anything except for either a 613 system or a 7 Noachai system, how is it that he also says that if he wants to take on more for reward, then it's allowed to? So this is where Rav Moshe Feinstein comes in, and he said that what that means is referring to where it's, you know, it's just he's not doing it as a new fixed addition. So it's only where he does it without saying it's becoming part of his law system. If he does do that, then he's adding on to the seven. So if something is not part of those 67, I guess, as you refer to it, completely unrelated to any of those, so then that would be a problem if a Noachai would add on. However, if he just does something, and Maimonides and Rav Moshe Feinstein was very careful with Maimonides' words, because Maimonides says here, but if a Noahide wants to do any of the other mitzvahs in order to receive reward, meaning he's not doing it to add on to his body of law that he has to keep. He's not saying I now have an additional law in my obligations. He just freely wants to say, you know, I want to receive the reward for doing this act today. So then he says you could do that, because then he's not adding on to his system. All right, so that is how Rav Moshe Feinstein resolved that. And, I mean, Maimonides also is saying the words that if he wants to take on an additional command to receive reward. So it'll be clear from here to answer Madeline's question, and I'll get back to her directly, but taking on another law would be okay if the person's intent is to receive reward. He wants to benefit, or she wants to benefit from an additional law. But it can't be something that you fix into your system. And if I'd like to see that book that Rav Aaron put out on the 67 laws. But that would resolve the apparent contradiction in Maimonides.
Rabbi?
Yes.
So is Rabbi Feinstein saying that let's take on laws of kashrus? So some Noahide decides, I see the benefit to me of this, and I would like the reward for this, so I'm going to take on the laws of kashrus. And they're not saying that the Noahide system requires this, but they're saying, for me, I've decided to take this on in my life and stick with it. Not just today, but as a permanent thing in my life. Is that what he's saying is okay? In other words, the Noahide is not saying all Noahides have to do this, but the person is saying, I've decided for my life I want to do this.
No, that is prohibited. It doesn't matter that it's not that he has to make a statement that this is Noahide law. Is that he's making a statement that I have this obligation. He's not making a general statement about all Noahides. Even if he just does it himself as a regularly added obligation in his mind, that's the prohibition. That is the prohibition.
Oh, so it's the idea for him only of imposing an obligation on himself.
Right. The only way he could do that is if once in a while he just says, you know, I want to, today I'm going to just eat kosher. I want to receive the reward from that type of activity. But he's not fixing it into his regular activities.
So, So what if he decided that on an everyday basis?
That, according to Rav Moshe, would be prohibited. That is considered that he's now creating a new religion, because he's now taking the form, you know, the format of the Noahed laws, is he's now modifying it, and he's now saying, I have an addition to what was given me. I am now deciding that this also is Noahed. That's not allowed, because that's not true. If he wants to do it here and there, no real rhyme and reason, you know, I don't think it means he could only do it once in his life. It means that he's not officially making it part of his activities. So if, as long as he's not doing that, and he's just doing it for the sake of reward, not for the sake of obligation, so that would be okay. I still want to speak to Rabbi Chait about it and find out from his view, but you know, he's he was ordained a Rav Moshe, and again, you don't have to there's certain rules in terms of stock and all. So I would like to hear what his position is on. So I don't believe he's around right now this weekend. But I mean, clearly from Maimonides and Rav Moshe himself, and that this is really the prohibition to create the new religion, right? That's Maimonides himself. He says it openly. Either he keeps the 613 or he keeps the 7. So if he says that, but then he says we don't refrain the Noahide from keeping a law to receive reward, that has to mean. I mean, it seems very clear from the word that's exactly the prohibition. Prohibition is to now make a new system. And a new system means, in addition to the 7, I'm taking on an 8th law. That's a new system, and that's what's prohibited.
Well, okay. Can I contend just a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Good.
So, what if a Noahide were to take on the laws of family purity? Because they realize, well, I think in this class we've discussed some of the benefits of those laws.
Right.
I mean, they're very practical benefits. So they decide, my wife and I decided we're going to incorporate that into our lives because we see that it's a benefit to us. So would this be saying you can't do that?
Yes.
Hmm.
Let me ask you, though. I mean, I want to clarify. Did Rabbi Chait ever speak to you about keeping the Sabbath on a regular basis, but breaking one law so you're not keeping the Sabbath?
Yeah, we've talked about that.
And what was it? You go ahead.
Well, I don't think he's ever said you need to do this. And he's explained why you cannot, a Noahide cannot keep the Sabbath.
He did explain that?
He did.
Okay, what did he say?
His argument, if I recall, was that the Sabbath was given to the Jewish people, specifically for them, and that it would be, if a Noahide tried to take that on, it would be, if I recall, like stealing it from the Jewish people, because this was specifically for them. Now, he did not extrapolate that out to other commandments, but that specifically Shabbos, that was something that in a way doesn't make any sense for the rest of the world to keep in the same way that the Jews do, because it was specifically for the Jewish people. But I was left with the impression from my discussions with him that one's decision to quote, take on, unquote, another commandment was, as long as it wasn't one of those very few where there, you know, you're specifically prohibited from doing so, that was okay. But that one should only do it if one did it because they saw the benefit to themselves, not because they thought it would make them more religious or they'd win more points or, you know, somehow. But if they saw, yes, taking this on is a benefit to me, that was acceptable, and that it wasn't a situation of, and I've heard this before, you know, if you do it 3 times, then you're now obligated or something like that. But it was simply a case of you decide to do this because, you know, you feel that it's valuable to you. And I never got a sense there was any prohibition around doing that, other than things like Shabbos and, you know, maybe a couple other things that you're specifically prohibited about.
Right.
But again, that's my remembrance of what he said, and I do not claim that my memory is infallible.
Right. So he's basically, it sounds like he's saying like Maimonides, that you want to take it on because you see the benefit. That's what he means, the Kabel's heart, to receive the reward. You see the benefit. And do it. But there, you're saying that Rabbi Chait did not say there was a limit. You mean you could do it as a fixed new thing?
He never gave me the sense I got was there was no fixed thing about it. In other words, if I took it on, I took it on. Or if I chose to do it, I chose to do it.
Right.
And that if I did it for 6 days or 12 days or 2 months, and then I didn't,
right,
that was okay too. But it wasn't like, unless somebody actually takes a vow, which my recollection is he strongly encouraged against.
Right. Yeah, that's in line with this too.
Yeah. But that you could just do that for the benefit of doing it.
Right. All right, I'll try to clarify with him, but it seems from my mind of these words clearly that, and you know, also from Moshe Feinstein, that you know, doing it with no rhyme or reason in terms of when and where you do it is fine. It's just making it a fixed addition to the system, which is a problem, because then that now distorts what the actual Noahide system is, and it's basically like a new religion. Like if I would add, you know, instead of, you know, my tzitzit being on four corners, I now make a fifth corner law. So that would be a violation of the Torah. It's like, you know, we're creating a whole new system with that one little violation. Because I'm now saying that, well, the 614 commands, not 613. So it'd be the same type of a thing. Yeah, the preservation of the system is of course, the most important matter. That's of optimum concern.
Rabbi, that was also my understanding when we talked to Rabbi Chait, was that it wouldn't be adding on to the seven Noahide laws, that it would be kept completely separate from the seven Noahide laws, so it wouldn't be like creating, you know, or adding to.
Yeah, if it's done in this loose manner, but.
Hmm. Couldn't a person do something, you know, every day for the rest of their life, And as long as they have the attitude that, you know, they're doing it for their own benefit and they're not obligated in it, you know, as long as they didn't have the attitude that, you know, this is now a thing I'm obligated in for the rest of my life, but couldn't they still simply choose, you know?
I don't know. To me, it sounds like that's now... he's making a permanent change to what he feels is, you know, God's will for him.
I guess it'd be more of a thing of just kind of attitude, though, which I guess is kind of a fine line, but let's say if, I used the example earlier of, you know, eating kosher. If somebody decides, you know, that will be something that benefits them, you know, I mean, are they going to decide that one day, and then the next day, that they don't? I mean, they can decide not to do it, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it seems like it'd be somewhat consistent for a person to,
Yeah, it's inconsistent, but maybe that's...
If they decided it one day, that they're going to decide it the next day, and the next day too, you know?
Well, that's the point, to consistently do something which is not part of the Noahide framework is the problem.
This is, you know, is the problem the consistency of doing it, or is the problem the, like, taking it on as an obligation?
Well, that's what it appears like when it's being done on a regular basis.
Yeah, it would appear like you're taking it on as an obligation.
Right. That's the problem.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe the issue is around the way the person is thinking about it, because, for example, if I decide, you know what, I'm just not going to eat refined sugar anymore, because it's not good for me, and it's got health benefits, or health detrimental benefits, and so forth. And so I just decide I'm not going to do that. Now, it has nothing to do with seven Noahide laws or anything else. That's just something I'm going to decide for myself. I can't imagine there's any prohibition against that.
No, not at all.
So if I decide to not eat pork for the rest of my life because I see that it's a benefit to me, seems like there would be no prohibition there. But if I start to say, no, I don't eat pork because of the $7 hide laws, or because, in other words, I start imposing a Torah obligation on myself, now it seems like I've twisted the intent of the system.
Right.
Okay.
But the question I would list, an interesting question, would it be prohibited that if as an Ohad I stop eating pork, since it now correlates exactly to a Torah law that's not intended for an Ohad, is there a problem in doing that? If it's clearly, if there's a health issue, I can't see there being a problem. Right? If there's a clear health hazard by eating something, you know. But if there's not, and it's a subjective call, but it happens to mimic the Torah law, then I would question. Maybe there might be something to review there. But it's something like a person just decides, you know, he wants to start taking vitamins because he sees the health benefit. It has nothing to do with the Torah. So, of course, there's no, that he's not doing that in the capacity of a religious obligation, of a Torah obligation. He's doing that as a decision that has to do with health. Nothing to do with any type of Torah activity, so it's perfectly fine for Noah had to do that. Want to wear red every day? Go right ahead. There's no that's outside of the parameters of Torah.
You know, that could interestingly start to get tricky because let's suppose that I'm oversimplifying the laws of family purity, but I know. But essentially, man and wife are separate for approximately 2 weeks out of every month, if I can just make a generalization.
Right.
So let's say that a Noahide decided, no, you know, we see the benefit of some separation between us. That's a little much for us. So we're going to decide that we're going to abstain from relations 1 week out of every month.
Well, that borders on the question earlier. Did Rabbi Shaiva say that if you'd like, you can keep every Sabbath but break one law? Was that ever told to you by him? Or?
Did he say that, Carol? He did say.
He did say that you could keep everything but you needed to violate, like light a match or something.
All right, so this way you're not keeping the Sabbath, so you could probably probably apply that rule to family purity too. Do everything but break one thing.
Yeah, except I got the impression there was something unique about the Sabbath that did not apply to virtually all the other laws.
Yeah, but that's lenience. That means certainly, if you could even go that far and keep everything except you light a match, and that's regarding the Sabbath, which is the most strict, so certainly things like family purity that are not just a gift to the Jew, that they're, it's less strict, so certainly you should be able to apply that reasoning.
Oh, I see. Are you saying you couldn't keep it exactly the way a Jewish person does, or you could?
You could not. Do it, you know, just like, you know, he said regarding the Sabbath, break one thing, so this way, you know, you're not violating the prohibition of keeping the Sabbath, or adding on to the religion. So do the same thing with family purity.
Well, that'd be an interesting one to get his specific take on.
Yeah. Yeah, I intend to.
Yeah, I guess the question that comes up then in my mind, okay, say with the family purity, you know, if you could do it, I've heard people say it about other things too, you know, if you do it, but you just don't do it in quite the same way that the Jew does, but then, I mean, how does that explain, you know, when Rambam says, you know, if they want to do it, you know, like that, how does he word it exactly, as long as they do it?
We don't hold them back from doing it exactly.
Right.
As long, but that's only a infrequent type of a occurrence where you just happen to do it today. You're not making it as part of your system. Then if you want, and you're doing it just for the sake of the reward. There you're not doing it for the sake of obligation. And you're also just you're doing it once in a while, or you know, maybe just right now I'm gonna do this once, and that's it. Who knows if I'll do it again? So Daddy said it's
so
okay.
With family purity, the problem would be
you're repeating it.
Ongoing thing.
Right. Then you couldn't do it exactly. If you wanted to do it exactly just for the sake of reward, then you could do it like once here, once there, whatever.
Okay.
Rabbi, I'm a little bit surprised, and I guess, that it doesn't appear that anyone's interpreted Maimonides between Law 9 and Law 10 as making a distinction between an idolater and whatever he's referring to in chapter or Law 10 as a Noahide, because that's the road I thought you were going to go down, to say that, well, an idolater has to stick to its 7 or its 613, but a Noahide, once they fall into that category, and we have to talk about what that entails, is then allowed to go ahead and perform one of the Torah's mitzvahs to receive reward. Because I notice in the first sentence in Law 10, he says, provided he performs it as required. So it appears that Maimonides is saying, yes, it's okay for a Noahide to add an extra mitzvah as long as he performs it the way it's supposed to be done.
Well, he doesn't say as long. He says, and we don't hold them back from doing it as it should be done. I mean, we don't try to stop him from doing it exactly the way it should be done. We don't try to make him distort it at all. We allow him to do it completely as he wants. This is what he does a once in a while thing. But I believe the reason why he switches the terms, which is what I wanted to get at from the beginning, is that, like I said, throughout the entire chapter 10, he used the term Noahide. When he hits Law 9, right, then he used the term idolater. But I believe the reason is like this, is because he's talking about not two different people, but capacities. He uses the terms differently. He could use the term idolater and Noahide to describe two discrete people. He can also talk about the capacity in one person. A person has come from an idolatrous background, and that same person is somebody who now wants to keep Noahide law. So inasmuch he wants to keep the Noahide law, so there all the laws in chapter 10 talk about, well, what are the laws concerning this person who's a non-Jew. So he refers to that person as a non-Jew who's involved in the Noahide laws as a Noahide, because that's the area of following the laws. That's the aspect, that's the capacity in which he's functioning when Maimonides is addressing his observance of these laws. He addresses him as Noahide. But when he talks about the prohibition of Sabbath and Torah study, see, Sabbath and Torah study are problematic not because he is Noahide, but because he came from an idolatrous background. So therefore, he identifies the person, that very same person who is a Noahide, he identifies him as idolater, meaning that background from which you came is really what the problem is in terms of observing Torah and the Sabbath. It's not the Noahide capacity which is a problem. It's a different aspect of your nature, of your identity, which conflicts with these specific two laws. Keeping the Sabbath and studying Torah have a problem because the Sabbath is all about creation, and an idolatrous background completely opposes a monotheistic view. So he says, not because of your Noahide capacity. That's why he changed the term to Akum, to idolater, in the beginning of Law 9. There, when he starts to address, can this Gentile keep the Sabbath and learn Torah? So there, he says, no, he doesn't address him as a Gentile, I mean, as a Noahide anymore. Now he addresses him as the idolater. And the Talmud does as well. Perhaps to indicate that is from where the problem comes. Not the capacity of Noahide. There's no problem with the capacity of Noahide to study Torah and to keep the Sabbath. Right? Because you see Noah himself was a righteous person. He recognized God, the Creator. And in the primary concepts which were in the Torah later on. So it's not that capacity of a Noahide that conflicts with Torah study and with keeping the Sabbath. It's the background from where he came. The identity is an idolater. That's why I believe he uses the term over there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
It's interesting. And that would be a very good credit to the Rambam, to Maimonides, for very subtly just slipping in that he switches the term right there. But then he goes back, and he says in 10 that Noahide that wants to keep the commands, because of course, it's not going to be the capacity of idolatry that a person wants to keep the commands. It'll be the Noahide, that capacity. Okay, so that I believe is why he's switching off, just to show you an insight as to why the Torah study and the Sabbath observance is a problem, because it conflicts with a certain aspect of the nature, a certain identity from where this person may have come from. Okay, so that's when he uses the terms of idolater or Noahai to refer to two different faculties, two different capacities of the same human being. But he also uses it in the end of Law 10 to refer to two different people too. But again, you have to study the Maimonides. It can't just be that we read it. Otherwise, it's completely confusing. So that's what he says at the end of 10, when he refers to an idolater that gives charity as opposed to a Noahai that gives charity. There's clearly two different people that give the charity. So, but again, the Rambam wrote in a way, just like the Torah. It has to be studied. So you can't just read his writings. But when you look at it, then you develop a very enjoyable insight. I mean, when I first saw that, I said, wow, I see he's switching off. Why? But you think into it, and you start seeing, where did he switch off? Oh, he switched off by the Sabbath and by Torah study. That's interesting. So you tell me, Doug, if this addresses your question that you had before.
Yeah, I hear it. Can I ask you a question about the translation of the first sentence of Law 10?
Mm-hmm.
The way my English translation reads is, we should not prevent a Gentile, and I realize that should be Noahide, who desires to perform one of the Torah's mitzvos in order to receive reward from doing so, provided he performs it as required.
No.
The word provided is in brackets, so it's clearly their inference.
That's right. This is how I would read it. Alright? I think it's a very
clear. That is how you would read it?
No, that's not how I would read it.
Ah, okay.
Provided is a mistake, according to the way I understand this. He says, I'll transliterate it. He says, a Noahide that desires to do a command from the other, or the remaining commands of the Torah, remaining means outside of a seven, in order to receive reward, we do not prevent him from doing it according to his laws. That's it.
We do not prevent him from doing it according to his laws?
To its laws.
To its laws, we do not prevent him from doing it.
Meaning if you wanted to, let's say this holiday of Sukkot, lift up a lulav and shake it, no, we would not prevent you from doing it exactly as the Torah specifies for a Jew.
Okay.
Meaning the inference is that you might think you'd have to stop the Noahai from doing it exactly. There he says no, because why would you think that? You would think that you'd have to stop him from doing it exactly, because then it's like he's adding on a new law. Just like the Sabbath. You'd have to do everything but light a match. So he's saying no. It's not a problem if he's just going to do it once in a while just to receive reward. Then it's not incorporating it as an additional command. He's not doing it for the sake of command. He's doing it for the sake of reward. Then it's okay to do it exactly as it's prescribed. So I think they translated that, but they didn't study that. Right, it makes sense.
Thank you, that's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, any questions or comments? That's pretty much what I wanted to do.
Rabbi?
Yes.
When we talked about doing it once in a while for reward, to me that sounds like sort of when I feel like it, and then you're getting into more the emotions rather than clearly seeing the ideas behind it using your intellect.
No, I wouldn't say the person's using their emotions. They see the benefit, and it doesn't mean they want to receive reward. They want to do it for reward. They see the benefit of this law. I mean, that would apply to any human being, that they see a benefit to this specific law. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong either with there being an emotion to want the good. That should be the case. We have emotions for a reason, you know. We have emotions for, you know, a very good reason.
Then if you see the benefit of it, then why wouldn't you just do it all the time instead of, well, today I don't feel like doing it?
Well, a person may want to, but if they just, you know, today they feel like doing it, there's nothing wrong with the fact that, let's say, they emotionally got motivated to this law, but, I mean, if they're purely doing it out of an emotion, they have no idea why they're doing it, so then it's like a Jew who does it without any, you know, concept of what the law is. There's no benefit to either person, Jew or non-Jew. I think it was Rashi who said that. I think we're quoting Rabbi Chait, that the person does a law, he has no reason, he has no understanding why he's doing it, he doesn't gain. All the laws were given in order to permeate our souls, to inculcate into our minds new concepts of truth, new true ideas. And that every single time we do something which we realize is true, we've crossed the line from being convinced intelligently to being convinced 100% with our minds and our bodies, because the way a human being is designed is that until a thought becomes an action, there's a rift in his conviction. The person is convinced of something, and conviction is synonymous with 100% conviction. You don't have to say the cup is full 100%. Full means 100%. So conviction also means 100%. So when a person is truly convinced, he does the action. If I am convinced that, you know, this is a good person, I go out of my way to help them. If I don't help the person, that means somewhere in me that I'm lacking conviction. So the commands are in order to bring a person to demonstrate his real conviction, just because that's how a human being is. That is the barometer, and it's a great gift that God put us into a physical state, because when we see that we are not acting, that should be a very glaring alarm that, hey, I'm not convinced about this thing. I know I'm supposed to do it, and I'm not doing it. The fact that I am not doing it, my inactivity, is a clear sign of my lack of conviction in this area, whatever it is. So the person must, you know, be doing the act based on a conviction in his mind. So really, and the act itself then shows, yes, he's really convinced. I mean, of course, the most important command in the Torah is Torah study. But that means, that's because our highest level of our beings is our intellects. So when we engage our intellects and when we apprehend new ideas, we are fulfilling our role as God deemed us to fulfill it in the highest level. But there's one more thing. It has to follow through an action. And Rabbi Chait took this up. He talked about the very last paragraphs in the Guide for Perplexed, that when the prophet talks about the perfection of man, he ends up not by saying that he should just be involved in Torah study, but that he does charity and justice and good, you know, kindness in the earth. Meaning that the thoughts, the conviction in the true ideas, have to be measured in terms of action. Then you really know you're convinced intelligently of something. I mean, it's not so much the action, it's the thought which is the most important thing, that we see new ideas, because that gives us greater knowledge of God. But if we do not act on those thoughts, then it shows us that it's not really that clear in our minds. We're not really convinced of that being true. It's not a real value that we hold as being 100% true to us. So the action has to be there, but that's merely an indicator that we have the correct ideas. They go hand in hand. So that's why it can't just be that you have the right concepts of justice. You must follow through your actions. Then you know that you really are a changed person and you now value this new concept of justice. I mean, that's really what the our goal is here. The goal is really to see new ideas all the time, to constantly be striving towards greater understanding of God, and to make changes in ourselves that we improve. But it can't just be theoretical change. If it doesn't translate into action, that means we should know that that is a glaring alarm that what we just learned really has not become a new value to ourselves. It's only a new value or only a changed and improved person when we act on it. But again, a person should be careful too not to think that he wants to have a sense of ego gratification that he has a new value, so he'll force himself to act. But a person should sense if that's a difficult thing to do. See, the act should come very easy when it's a conviction. If it's an act that has a certain level of reluctance or distaste of any quantity, then the person should realize he's just doing it out of ego, a false sense of trying to project on himself that, I've just reached a higher level in life. He's just going through the motions. But if there's any reluctance, if there's any sense that he's coercing himself to do it, then he's really not convinced. Something which you're convinced is true and that you value, a person will do with ease. And it may be that he has to rehearse it. There may be like certain things that are a little more difficult. I have to go away, I have to travel here in order to fulfill this law, so on and so forth. But a person pauses each time and recognizes the value and he sees the importance to it. So yes, there may be a certain amount of stress that may be associated because he has other things he'd like to do, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't have the value. It could just be that he does value it. He knows that somebody has to constantly be visiting. The person's sick, let's say, and is taking his way, taking time away from work, and he has to perhaps each time he visits that person, once a week, once a month, whatever it is, he now has to think to himself. He has to go. You know, he has to process that reluctance. All right, I'm not going to make money during that time doing it. But then, if he gets to the point where he realizes that's not the important thing, the important thing is really to, you know, put a smile on this sick person's face or to give him some company. So then, even if you have to go through that, you know, each time, that's a perfected person. A person is human, and emotions will come up, and you may have to fight emotions for a long time. I remember somebody telling me recently that I think Rav Soloveitchik, I think he did like, he said, I kept the, you know, Yom Kippur, like, you know, it took me 70 years to get it right. Something like that. You know, like a humorous type of a point, but just showing you how, you know, even a great mind, a great righteous person like, you know, like that, it may take decades to get a certain law right, but it doesn't mean that a person's, you know, the emotions go back and forth. It's just the way we are. The emotions are always in flux. And they will always be, you know, fighting against something. But the question is now, what do we do? Do we give into it, or do we process and think about it right? There's a certain amount of reluctance, but the value I know is true, is here. And if you follow through with action, you do it. So again, you've torn down another wall regarding the, you know, the emotional blocks that you have, and it should be the next time all the more easier, because the more you practice also and engages and you do the action, you do the mitzvos more, So that now breaks down the power of the emotion. And it says actually, it says regarding the sexual, you know, the rabbis always speak like the Torah in a very pure type of language. So they say that there's a small limb in man, and if he starves it, it will become full. If he feeds it, it will get hungry. So they refer, of course, to the sexual drive, and they're saying that if you starve the drive, if you control it, it doesn't mean to starve it completely. A person has to satisfy it. But if it's a person controls it, then it becomes lesser. The drive itself, the strength that it has, the pull on man, will be less. If a person satisfies it a lot, so then he now aggravates it, which means it'll now need, it'll desire it more and more. The more he's engaged in it, the more he's going to be accustomed to wanting to do to fulfill the desire. And that applies across the board. It's like, you know, drugs too. The more drugs a person takes, the more they need the next time to reach a high. So, you know, the concept is that a person has to, if he controls himself more and more, and even if it's any command, so he's going to diminish the drive against fulfilling it.
Rabbi?
Yes, sir.
Can I ask your opinion on one footnote on Law 10? This is in the only English translation I know of the Mishnah Torah is the one put out by Mosnaim Publishing, brown-covered books. And they have the Hebrew and the English, and then they have footnotes. One of the footnotes on the first sentence of Law 10 says that a person who is not commanded to fulfill a mitzvah receives less reward from God for its observance than one who is commanded. I think we've talked about that before. Nevertheless, even in the latter instance, God acknowledges the person's deeds and grants him blessing. A Gentile may only fulfill mitzvot for the sake of reward. He is forbidden to accept them as obligations incumbent upon him. Thus, his intent must be the very opposite of a Jew's who serves God for his, meaning God's sake, and not for his own.
Therefore, his intent must be opposite to the Jew that he serves God, meaning the Jew serves God for his sake and not for his own.
Right, the Jew serves God for God's sake and not for the Jew's own sake.
So that means he's trying to say that the Gentile has to do it not for the sake of obligation, but he's just doing it because he wants reward.
For the sake of his own personal reward.
Okay, that's all right. That seems to be in consonance with what Maimonides wrote.
That's very interesting.
But it seems to be that's what we said earlier. It's not that much different. I mean, it may be slightly rewording it a bit, but
yeah, I'm just wondering I wonder if the danger of a Gentile wanting to fulfill a mitzvot for the sake of serving Hashem is the danger of the religious emotion getting you caught up in, I'm doing all this for God.
No, I mean, he could be doing it, he could be desiring to do the mitzvah because he sees that it is commanded to the Jew, and he looks at himself as having the same potential as the Jew, so he wants to take that on. But the law is that either you take all 613 or you just take the 7 in order to preserve the system. That's what it's all about. So if you want to take on another one without the rest of the 613, so then there's the caveat, and that is, do it as long as you're just doing it for the sake of reward. You're not saying it's incumbent upon you, then it's okay. Exactly as we discussed.
Okay.
Now, regarding next week is is Tisha B'Av. I'm not sure if Rabbi Chait usually gives a class, though. And we usually are, you know, in the synagogue for quite a while in the morning, so I won't be available next week. So we'll pick up, I guess, the week after.
Okay.
All right. If I see there is any change of schedule, but usually we're there till about, I don't know, 11:30, noon, and then he resumes with the class. He does it about, I think, 1. So I would just say we skip next week, and we'll pick up the following week.
Okay. That works.
Okie doke.
Thank you, Rabbi. Very interesting.
Okay, my pleasure again.
Yep. You have a great week, a great 2 weeks.
Yes, you too. Okay.
By the way, Rabbi, did you get that second installment that I sent you, or that I sent to Naomi?
Yeah, I got that, but what I ran in the Jewish Times this week was the second half of your, what you sent me already, right? That's not, what you sent to Naomi this week was all new material, right?
Right, I just want to make sure it arrived, because I had not heard from her, and so I thought, gee, did the email get there, so I want to make sure you got it.
All right, but it would be better for me if you sent it to me as a Word document. The
format. Instead of a PDF, okay.
Yeah, instead of a PDF, because the formatting is, it will stay intact.
Happy to do so.
Very good. So I'll look out for that. I send it to my personal email. This way I'll just keep it separate from what you sent to Naomi.
And your personal email is?
MG.
Oh, okay, right. At ny.whatever.com.
Right.
Okay.
Anyway, design right.
Okay. All right. I will send that along.
Okay. Excellent.
All right.
And I got some feedback. People are enjoying your article, so they were.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good. I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate you looking it over, and please let me know if you see anything that's incorrect or out of place.
It was excellently done. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I learned it all from all my teachers. So.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah.
It's all the transmission, the line of transmission.
Yeah. All right. Have a great 2 weeks.
Okay, you too. Be well.
Be well. Thanks for
any questions come up, please feel free. I'm around all week, so it's just Sunday that won't be, so.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks.